Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. And good morning, Rabbit.
Good morning. Now, what's in today's show? Today's
today
show is a little different.
Today we're going to do products. I think it's called products, but it includes appliances as well as food.
Yes, it does. Some very interesting food stuffs out of the way kinds of things.
Well, you know, it's a scene that keeps moving. I mean, you can't sit still or stand still, I guess, in an area of food, wine, and travel because everything keeps shifting, changing. First up, though, it's a very old established company.
One name that hasn't changed for a very long time.
Right.
And we discovered that, in fact, there was a link from wearing blenders to wearing the band leader. And the tradition has gone on for several decades since then and is still going on today, and they're still charging forward, made in America, making the kinds of things you need in your domestic kitchen as well as your commercial kitchen. So
yeah.
Let's hear it for wearing blenders.
Well, finally, we have somebody who could explain the really fascinating history of an American classic company, I would call it. Mary Rogers, would you call it an American classic?
Of course I would.
Yeah, of course you would. Anyhow, tell us just a little bit about you and about the company Waring.
Well, I've been working in the home appliance industry for a little over 20 years. I started in retail, but I've been working in marketing for appliance companies for a long time. And I specialize in consumer communications. That's my big specialty. So I'm responsible for consumer advertising and trade advertising and public relations and internet marketing and a whole gamut of fun and interesting things. And I have a passion for cooking and traveling and food in general, which certainly helps me in my in my day-to-day job, to say the least.
This is a very long answer to a question about what's wearing.
I didn't even get to that part yet.
Yeah, right.
Well, actually, wearing has much more interesting history than I do, but the company was started many years ago in the mid-30s when the company launched the first consumer blender to the marketplace. But it was actually introduced at an international houseware show where the company had worked with the famous Fred Waring, who was a band leader who
he was
traveled
famous for
around
something
the country.
Else, right?
You know, how was that hooked up? I never understood that.
Well, the simplistic answer is Fred knew a lot of people, and he was very entertaining, and he did radio shows, and he traveled all over the country, and he also kind of used that part of his personality to promote the blender, but he tinkered with it, and finally found a company to help him launch it.
So he actually was responsible for designing it?
Yes, yeah. So, and he kind of used his entertainment shtick to promoted, you know, kind of early marketing in those days. So it's a very interesting history
now,
for
this,
a corporation.
This was a first of a kind. I guess before then, professionals had had one, but there was nothing even remotely like it for the home kitchen.
No, and originally it was called the Miracle Mixer, and then it was called the Blendor, and then it was changed to Blender, which is the more generic blender name that most appliance companies use today.
I see. And I think my mother had a dear friend who sang in, with that orchestra.
Oh, she did? Really?
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
Yes. It seems like a long time ago. So where are we now with the blender? So many companies making them now, right?
Yes, that's totally true. It's obviously a very kind of utilitarian product today. If you think about when it first came out, it was kind of like very cutting edge, and now it's a home staple. But the company has always had its roots in the commercial food service business, and that blender was, you know, developed as a bar blender. And most of the products that the consumers know us for today have some type of heritage that leads back to commercial food service business. And, you know, consumers are also using a lot more professional heavy-duty products in their home. You see that with large appliances and small appliances alike.
Yeah, I mean, I want one of those induction things.
Oh, yeah.
That
it happened, you know, it's kind of interesting because as far as acceptance of induction for American consumers, it's still pretty low. But a lot of companies are trying to get consumers to embrace it. It's much more popular in, obviously, in Europe, where electricity is at a premium.
Well, I mean, I think my love of this idea goes back to when I won a prize in the science fair. making an induction coil that lit up a light bulb.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, we used pie tape, the paper that they used to have that went around the edges of pies.
Oh, yeah, I know what that is.
Yeah, my mother had a bunch of that, so we used that and we wrapped it around something. And then we insulated with something. Anyhow, we sparked between two terminals and it lit up a light bulb and I went.
But she wasn't able to blend anything.
No. Not enough power.
Well, now, tell me what else you're doing. You're always coming out with new products.
Yeah.
Do you have one of those heat circulator things?
No.
See, I want one of those, too.
Well, we do have an induction cooktop, but it's a single unit that we came out with about a few years ago.
But there's some other really neat things, too.
Yeah. We have several new products that just launching. The first is a double Belgian waffle maker, and I had mentioned earlier this kind of goes back to food service application where consumers in hotels get to enjoy a fabulous Belgian waffle. And so with our new one, you can actually make two very thick Belgian waffles at the same time so that you can make about two waffles every 3-4 minutes, which is very convenient because if you have a family or you're entertaining, want to be able to turn them out very quickly. But the nice thing about it is it rotates, so it makes a really, really crisp crust because you're rotating the batter around the hot plate. But it still comes out with a very tender interior.
Oh, that
beautiful
sounds
product.
Interesting.
It's all stainless and has a ready-to-bake and a ready-to-eat light. One of our really top-selling items. It's very, very popular. We had one that we sold for several years that was a single waffle, and now we have one that's a double. So you can make twice as many waffles.
But you haven't abandoned blenders either, right?
Yes.
So the latest thing is a thing called an immersion blender?
Yes. A professional immersion.
Yes.
A hand blender.
Yes. Hand blenders are very popular. Consumers like to do lots of different things with them. For instance, you can make batter for pancakes or even a waffle batter. You can mix with it using the beaker that comes with it. And basically what happens is you can use it for everything from vinaigrette to you can make a whipped topping out of skim milk. It's very efficient.
Well, when do you use that as opposed to a hand mixer or a full blender?
Well, the difference is with a full blender, you're operating much higher RPM, and a full blender also is designed specifically to emulsify like a hand blender, but crush ice. A handheld immersion blender cannot crush ice. It can do a lot of things, but that's one thing it can't do. It can chop. A lot of people like to use it to blend sauces and soups right in the pot, so that if you're going to make any type of, say you're making a split pea soup and you want to smooth it out,
yeah,
use the handheld blender right in the pot for that. So you don't have to pour the hot liquid into a blender jar and transfer. So it's very convenient for that. It's very convenient for making vinaigrettes, mayonnaise, any type of emulsified item like that. So it's really convenient. A hand mixer, on the other hand, is meant to do things like meringue, whip, and add a lot of air into something. Or heavy.
Can't do that with a immersion.
No. You can make like a whipped topping, but I've never actually tried making like an egg white or a meringue with it.
Because it's just got a different thing to whirs, right?
Yes.
It has a blade instead of like a rod. I mean,
the
immersion blender has sort of like a rod.
Well, I had one that had three different things that you put on the stick.
It also didn't work either.
It also didn't work. Isn't he awful, Mary?
It was not a wearing product.
No, it was not.
I remember what happened to the wearing blender now that you had when we first met each other. We used to take frozen orange juice and make what we call orange slush out of it. So we would put the contents of one of those cardboard tube things of frozen orange juice, we would put that in the blender.
With ice cubes.
With ice cubes and make a very thick slurry called orange slush or orange slush. And eventually the blender didn't like that anymore.
Oh, dear. Now, juice extractors are not new, but you have one that's called a pulp eject. What does that mean?
Yes. There's several different types of juice extractors. Some are called pulp ejection, and which means it actually removes the pulp from the interior of the juicer while you're juicing and dispenses it into an exterior container. And then there are some that the juice and the pulp, the pulp is contained inside the machine so that when you're done, you need to obviously then take that apart and clean it. You have to take the other one apart too, but it actually pushes the pulp into an exterior container so that it, as you're working, you can keep working without having to stop, take the machine apart, take out the pulp, and continue. So it's very convenient, especially if you are doing a lot of juice.
So this would take like a whole fruit? And
you can put anything up to 3 inches into it. So
okay.
You can do a whole apple, a whole orange. You can also do really hard items like, you know, pineapple or beets. A lot of people make beet juice or, you know, obviously, and then there's also the typical carrot apple style.
Okay, all right. So you can make those wonderful beverages that make you see in the dark and...
I've eaten up carrots.
Had all those antioxidants to your system and that
yes.
kind of stuff.
Well, you know, there's a lot of great benefits for juicing. The one thing, though, that, you know, a lot of people recommend is that you take, say if you're going to do a lot of carrots, you should take, and you can save some of the ejected pulp, and you can use it for soup stock, or you can use it for carrot cake, or carrot muffins, or things like that.
Oh, that's good.
Because one of the things people also talk about when you're juicing is that you're getting all the great benefits and the nutrients, but you're also not getting the fiber. So there's ways that you can reuse that fiber too. So
now you have also a cordless wine chiller, which that's not a new idea, is it?
We have a lot of items in our wine chilling category. Some are electronic, and we have one model that is cordless, which allows you to use it outside. It's not a super high tech, but it holds everything from a champagne bottle down to, you know, a small bottle of like ice wine or, you know, preserved.
Yeah, well, that's different from some of the ones I've seen, though.
Yes.
We had a couple that were so complicated. It was, and you finished up having to put ice in it anyway, so we figured why not just use an ice bucket filled with water? It was almost as efficient.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, the ones, our electronic versions are much more, you know, high-tech. They have libraries with presets in them, and you just, you know, we have doubles, so if you want to serve one bottle of white and one bottle of red, you can program them at different temperatures based on the varietal.
Oh, sure. Very sensible, yes.
Yeah, so those are really good, too.
I'm going to ask you a question that you probably already have an answer to, but I want to hear what you have to say, is what really sets apart Waring products?
Well, you know, I think that the company and the brand have a very interesting heritage. The company's been around for a very long time. Like I mentioned, it's been around since the mid-30s. And, you know, it has a unique personality. Also, like I said, we, you know, are best known for our commercial heritage, which really comes out in the design of our products and the types of products that are very popular with our consumers. And also our finishes are very professional and, you know, we always try to make them a little bit unique compared to other things that are on the marketplace.
So they look good.
Yes. Right. And, you know, that's important to consumers. Even if a consumer is not going to keep their product out on the counter all the time, they still have a certain expectation of the look and the design, you know, based on the brand.
Yeah, I would love to know where people put all these appliances, to be perfectly honest.
Right. I can tell you where I keep mine.
And I think
live in a really old house, so I don't have I don't have one of those, you know, McZillion-dollar kitchens.
I don't either. We have the same issue. Yeah.
And I creatively have some nice pantries in the basement where I put some of my appliances that I don't use as often as others.
But I keep my basic ones out. But all your
wearing
ones have to be out, of course. Otherwise the thought police would take you away. And,
I feel like I'm getting zapped right now.
I think the other thing that you might have said, I hate to make this a leading comment, but unless you abuse your wearing appliance, it probably does last most of a lifetime.
Yes, we have customers who send us emails all the time about how they got, you know, one of our blenders when they got married, and they just want to tell us how much they love it and use it and still have it. And a lot of people also don't know that we are manufacturing product in the United States, which is really
oh, that's good. Yeah.
Not something that you hear about very often.
We just interviewed somebody who manufactures in the United States. We were thrilled to bits.
Yeah, it was really exciting. So we're glad to hear Waring's still doing it. Anne, I think you had a final question.
Yeah, I'm always wondering, like, what's next? I mean, is there anything that you can think of that is being worked on that you could reveal without killing me?
Well, I can't tell you anything specific because then the thought police would definitely come after me. But I will tell you one of the things that our company is very, very concerned about is, you know, what's next, what do consumers want, and that's something that we do every day. You know, we're always examining the marketplace, how consumers utilize products, what they're looking for in, like, the next generation of something.
Uh-huh.
And it's not a highly, you know, super technical category. It's not like super electronics, you know, like telephones or computers or things like that. But, you know, there's always new applications and new things that come down the road, and we're always working on that every day, every hour of the day. Otherwise, you know, that's how companies become less viable, you know.
Well,
it's important.
Well, when you have something that's coming out and you can talk about it, be sure to get back in touch with us and on the menu. And listeners, you can listen right here, and you'll be among the very first to hear what Waring's working on. And in the meantime, keep those whirrers going.
Thank you so much.
Oh, yeah. And we always want to talk to you, and you know that.
I know.
Okay, Mary.
All right.
Thank you so much.
So much. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate you coming. Bye-bye. Now it's time to take a break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
And now we're back, and we're moving on to a company that I never knew before, Aromaco.
And they make a utensil. You call it a utensil?
I never knew. I never knew until I talked to my Chinese friend, Cindy Su Han, that I was bereft of an essential piece of equipment,
For your kitchen.
Rice cooker.
Because every Oriental housewife has a
rice cooker.
Rice cooker. Am I supposed to say Asian?
Yes.
Oh, dear. Well, I'm politically incorrect.
You are, frequently.
semi-politically incorrect, but I'm not politically incorrect when it comes to saying that every household should have one.
Oh, this is an amazing piece of equipment. It does more than, well, the whole company is an amazing company built up around these kinds of products.
But they make a rice cooker that's a whole lot more than a rice cooker, as you'll find out in just a moment.
Todd Rogers, I have to admit to you that until, maybe about 6 years ago, I didn't even know there was such a thing as a rice cooker. So you have lots of things that you can tell me about. Todd Rogers is the director of sales and marketing for a company called Aroma Housewares, and your company has a very interesting history. Why don't you tell our listeners about that?
Well, thank you. We started up at Aroma Housewares about 25, 30 years ago. Our founders were immigrants from Asia, and typical American dream story, they came over and were involved in a number of smaller sales opportunities where they would sell imported Asian handicrafts and those types of things. And eventually they stumbled into the small electrics category, and it's really taken off since then. We got our first rice cooker in a Macy's store about 20 years ago, and nowadays you can find this pretty much everywhere from Costco to Walmart to Target to Kmart, Sears, you name it.
Now, the interesting thing is that we discovered rice cookers, or more precisely, I should say, and discovered rice cookers from an Asian acquaintance who said no Asian household would be without one.
I guess
that's exactly, that was knowledge that the founders of your company brought with them.
That's true. Every Asian home has a rice cooker, and they use it 3 to 5 times a day.
Now, what else does Aroma Housewares produce before we get too far afield from that?
Well, in addition to rice cookers, we have a really nice market share in water kettles, the electric water kettles that have the auto shut-off feature. We also do a big business in electric ice cream makers that also come with a manual hand crank, sort of the traditional nostalgic ice cream maker of old.
You have to crank it?
No, you can be lazy. It's electric, but you can crank it if you want to.
Exactly. So you start out with the kids, you know, the grandkids cranking it for 3 minutes, and they lose interest, and then you put the motor on and let it finish up.
I've always wanted an ice cream maker, but we don't really eat that much ice cream to make it worthwhile. I mean, is this the kind of thing that has to go in the freezer anyhow?
Well, generally, you know, it's a four-quart canister, so you're making a gallon of ice cream at a shot, and that's a lot. And it's generally, it's used in the summertime, you know, at 4th of July parties and things like that.
See, I always
you have
wanted
a lot of folks over.
Yeah, I wanted to concoct weird and bizarre flavors, like eggplant.
Oh,
I thought eggplant parmesan ice cream would be good. But, of course, I mean, nothing is bizarre anymore. I mean,
I think it's a narrow market. I think eggplant parmesan ice cream has a narrow market.
Well, we got pickle juice popsicles. That was pretty weird.
Yeah, but that's a narrow market, too. But back to this rice cooker. I mean, this is
magical.
This is not your grandfather's rice cooker or grandmother's rice cooker. It's got all kinds of things it can do, some pending features that I would honestly never have thought of, but obviously a very inventive company figured out that they belonged in an appliance. Tell us some more about those, Todd.
Well, you guys touched on something early on that I think people, you know, when they first stumble on the rice cooker, they say, well, you know, these are great, the rice tastes fantastic. But when you start looking at the demographics, you know, the Asian family that eats rice at every single meal certainly can justify spending, you know, $29 or $39 on a rice cooker. But when it comes to the typical American family, it's difficult to justify because they only eat rice a couple of times a week. So we felt like if the rice cooker was only for making great rice, that it really limits the appeal to the mainstream American consumer. So about 6 years ago, we really started researching the habits of our consumers that are using rice cookers, and then we tried to expand the uses of those rice cookers. And this particular one that I think you guys are referencing is the Aroma Saute Then Simmer unit, which has the ability to actually serve as a saute pan as well as a rice cooker.
But how does this do it? There's a sensor that when the liquid's gone, it switches into saute mode? No, into steam mode.
All rice cookers have that ability to... They're basically... What makes a rice cooker great is that they shut off when the water goes away. So everyone's had the experience where you're at the stove and you're making rice and you get tied up doing something else and you come back and the water's gone and you've got an inch of rice stuck to the bottom of the pan.
Exactly. Oh, boy, I've experienced that.
And so what rice cookers do is they shut off when the water goes away because they sense that elevation in temperature. As soon as the water goes away, the temperature starts going up. And once it gets over boiling, like around 215 degrees or so Fahrenheit, it just shuts down and goes into an automatic keep warm mode. Well, for this unit, we had to find a way to override its tendency to shut down at that point because we wanted this thing to get really hot so that you could actually saute onions, you could saute meats and vegetables, and then you could cook rice afterwards. So what we did is we put the ability for it to add a lot of heat at the beginning of the cycle so you can get up to 300 degrees Fahrenheit or around 200 degrees Celsius and stir fry. Or you could, a lot of things like risotto or Spanish rice require that you actually saute the raw rice before you cook it.
Right.
And so you're able to do that, saute, you know, the grains, and then when you pour the liquid in, whether it's chicken broth or water, the unit also senses that decrease in temperature, and then it says, okay, now I'm going to go into a rice cooking mode and finish this up. So it's a great feature for the Hispanic market in the U.S. because they make a lot of Spanish rice, and this is the perfect thing for that. Up to now, they've been asking, a lot of our customers have been asking for that feature, and we just haven't been able to deliver it until we stumbled upon this little piece of technology, and we've really been able to sort of reinvent the category.
Now, when you say you stumbled on the technology, somebody else actually made the general device, and you incorporated the idea or the device into the cooker?
Well, actually, when I say stumble, what I really mean is that we tried to come up with ways to do this for a really long time, and every iteration didn't really... whether it was, wouldn't stand the test of time, it would give out over time, or whether it was getting too hot or too cold. It wasn't until we came up with some digital programming that we were able to get close. And then when we sort of solved the Spanish rice riddle, we realized that we were actually not just solving that riddle, but it's also the same exact cooking process that you use in making risotto. It's the same cooking process that you use when you're making a hamburger helper meal or any of these sort of prepackaged dinner meals, where you have to saute something first and then let it simmer on a cycle afterwards. And so trying to solve one riddle, we actually ended up solving several.
So you can actually saute or broil chicken at the same time as you're cooking
a starch to go along with it.
No, you can't boil it.
You can't. Oh, you, well, how do you do it? You sauté it? I mean, it says you, doesn't say you can.
Well, it steams. I mean, you're doing this rice thing at the bottom of the pan, and then there's the steaming. Why am I explaining this? Todd, you explain it.
Well, I think there's two concepts here. One is the ability to sauté and simmer. So first you're sautéing. And you're sautéing actually in the bottom of the rice cooker,
right.
Meats and vegetables. And then if you're making a casserole, maybe you add some pasta or rice, and then you let it simmer until most of the liquid has boiled off. And then you've got a nice stodgy casserole or rice dish. And the other thing that I think that Peter might be alluding to is that any standard rice cooker with a food steamer attachment is great because you can cook rice below while you have vegetables in a steam tray that mounts on top of the rice cooker.
Okay.
Most rice cookers nowadays do come with that.
So you can put chicken and broccoli in the top pot.
Exactly. That's a huge help for families that are, you know, nowadays super, super busy. They can just basically throw everything in and walk away and, you know, go shopping or play catch with the kids in the backyard or whatever, and then 30 minutes later the meal is ready.
It's sort of a translation of that the old steamer concept the Chinese have used for centuries, where they have that bamboo stuff one on top of the other. Bang, bang, bang,
exactly.
Right?
It's exactly where that comes from.
Wow. But it's all in this one integrated sparkling plastic and steel device.
Yeah, and it's digital. It's you can throw it in the dishwasher. I think it's like a miracle machine, to tell you the truth.
That's what we like to hear.
So the founders of this company must feel really proud of themselves. Are they still around?
Oh, absolutely. And they're still involved in the business, although probably more at the visionary level than they are at the actual day-to-day.
And it also has a setting for brown rice, and I'm eyeing it up as possibly I have one more package of Frika. And I wonder if it'll do that, too. I bet it will. You know Frika's coming? You better know that, Todd. Frika's...
Okay, I don't know what Frika is.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's weird.
You better check this out. It's, first of all, you can obviously find out about it in the same way everybody else does on the Internet, but it's Frekeh, and it's a toasted green grain.
Yeah.
The concept goes back to, like...
Middle East.
4,000 or 5,000 years pre-BC, in the land between the rivers, sadly known as Iraq, and reinvented in a modern way. The only person we know doing it is a gentleman in Australia. But his Frika grain does call for a rather different approach to cooking than rice, because the uncracked takes 25 minutes in a microwave. So we'll have to try it out in the rice cooker and see how long it takes there.
Yeah, well, it's not readily available yet in the U.S., so no. I'm just holding on to my one bag. I love this stuff. It's very nutty. It's wonderful.
But it's a category that I think is going to take off. I think concept of a toasted green grain isn't unique to wheat. I think once it gets here, it's really going to take off, and you're going to need to wait to cook it other than in a microwave. So if you're interested,
right.
We can make the connection for you, or you can do it for yourselves.
Sure. That sounds like a really interesting trend.
Well, this is a fun thing to sell, Todd, right?
Oh, absolutely. And again, making it sort of broadening the appeal over the years has been, obviously it's helped the company grow a lot, but it's also... We talk a lot in the marketing department about how what we really, the goal of everything that we do is to sort of make it easier for families to sit down at the table together. Most families have working parents. Both parents might be working, some of them doing two jobs. When you get together at the end of the day, you know, who wants to sort of slave over the stove and the oven making a meal? You know, with rice cookers, they have delay timers. You can basically throw stuff in the morning. It's ready for you when you get home in the afternoon. We really focused on trying to make this a really practical purchase. It's very affordable, you know, $29, $39, and ideally it gives you a lot of time back in the evening that you could be spending with your family.
I think it's great. I think it's a great American success story, and I'm sure you're going to come up with more fascinating products as time goes by, and I hope you'll keep in touch with us and make sure we have a chance to try them. And in the meantime, thank you so much for joining us today on The Menu.
Thank you guys for having me.
Okay, Todd. Time for another break, and we can use this time to go steam a dinner.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Well, here we are again, and wouldn't you just love to find, to think up a product that's going to be a huge bonanza. And of all places to look, oatmeal.
Well, we actually have two companies side by side.
Well, really, the other one is really, different.
Really? Well, I think both in a way they've done the same thing, but we're making a transition, listeners, just in case you hadn't cottoned onto it. We're making a transition from machines
that make food
products to food that makes your tummy happy.
Well, I mean, this Honey Ridge company is family-owned. I mean,
don't we first up? We have Mad Hectic Oatmeal.
We do. I just introduced that.
Which sort of explains itself in
exactly.
a way.
Exactly. You love this Mad Hectic Oatmeal.
Well, I've been eating it. The secret ingredient. And you'll actually discover this.
It's half and half.
The secret ingredient is that you add half and half, several times as you stir it
with dates.
It takes more and more.
But, with dates or goji berries.
dates and goji berries go in there okay, too.
What could
too.
Be wrong with that? But this other, the Honey Ridge products just scream quality top to bottom. It's, you have to listen to the interview, but it's just amazingly,
The amazing thing is that we had four generations on at the same time.
Oh, and they were amazing. Yeah, I keep using the word amazing, but I think if people listen to this, they'll figure out exactly what this is all about.
And you'll find out that the value of royal jelly, which may or may not be a banned substance.
I keep running into really nice people with the last name of Gallo, and here's a new one, Beth. Welcome to On the Menu.
Thank you so much.
We're here to talk about a product, Mad Hectic Oatmeal. Not your ordinary oatmeal, and in fact it's not. We'll have you explain.
Okay.
First of all, Peter's been eating this. He forgot to mention to you that what he's been eating it with, which makes it particularly delicious, is half and half, not even milk.
I
think skim milk is really stupid. It tastes like chalk water. I mean, if you're going to go for broke, you might as well do it right.
Exactly. Once I didn't have milk around, and I just broke out the vanilla ice cream, and it worked just as well.
That would be good, too. And suggested trying it with yogurt, which I haven't done yet, but which we'll also try one of these days. But we're experimenting with it. I have it every other day, just so that I don't get total withdrawal when the, when the supplies run out. But explain this Mad Hectic thing.
Well, I, like most people these days, lead a pretty hectic life, and I think that I'm eating well, and when I examine it, perhaps I'm not doing as good a job as I thought. And I had been meaning to make changes for years and wasn't always very good about doing that. So I thought, let's get something all in one package that has some of the ingredients I want to have every day. And that seemed like breakfast would have been the good place to start, since that's such an important meal of the day.
Now, you have a day job as well, then? So you have a hectic day job, or you just have children to take care of? Or?
I have children, and I have this business now, and I've had other jobs in the past. Every year seems to be different sometimes.
Yeah, give us the backstory to how you started. Did you have any prior experience with food?
Well, our family has always been interested in natural foods. My husband works at a Whole Foods up here near Providence, Rhode Island, and we've had a few small business ventures, but this was kind of my little thing. After I developed the recipes for myself and had been eating it for years, I didn't tell anybody, but I just started working with the business model and the packaging and so forth. Didn't really want anyone to say it wasn't a good idea or get in my way, so I kind of developed it and then sprang it on the family because there wasn't anything out there like this, so I thought I had a good chance.
No, there's something about Quaker instant oatmeal that just doesn't quite get it. It's just not quite the same product.
No. It leaves a bad taste in some people's mouths. And
our son used to love it, but he's coming to stay with his family next month, so I'm going to have to save some really good oatmeal for when he gets here.
There you go.
But there was another reason, too. You had a health issue, and you thought that this would be good for that, too?
Yes. Actually, when I turned 40, I noticed a few things, and you start getting a little more serious about your diet. So that's when I started experimenting. I'm one of the people that when they're busy, I either forget to eat or neglect to eat well. So that started it. And then I went through breast cancer, which was diagnosed very early. But in that process, I decided to put a few other ingredients, like organic ground flaxseed meal and some other things. So it kind of evolved. It took about 5 years, actually, to come up with the recipes that we use now.
Now, you've got 5 or 6 different flavors, I think.
Yes, we have 6 different flavors. Would you like me to name them?
Of course.
And we have almond pecan and raspberry almond, which are our 2 best sellers. We also have a chocolate raspberry and a red raspberry, a French chocolate. Those 3 are no nut flavors. And we have a strawberry pecan.
Now, I'm eating one that I think must be raspberry and almonds, but I'm not sure. That's the first the first one I started.
Yes.
And something else with it, at Anne's suggestion just this morning, she said, why don't you try with a few dates? So she bought some medjool dates and cut them up the night before so that they'd get softened nicely in the refrigerator, and then I just folded them in.
Wonderful.
With the oatmeal, and it was really excellent.
Everyone has their little favorite twists that they do, and some people use it in recipes and getting a nice following.
Now, what is the next step here? I mean, you've got it off the ground.
Yes, we're about 2 years old. Our second year, we tripled our volume. This year, we're more than 4 times as much. When people get educated that what's so different is it's a protein oatmeal, and it's very high in omega-3. Those are our 2 big things. And when people realize it's such a different oatmeal product, then they get it and see what it is. So we're working on that.
But the clever trick is it tastes good.
Exactly. When I do door demonstrations, my husband says, "Are you telling the people it tastes good?" I try to get out all this information, and I neglect to say that. But yes, people of all ages, a lot of kids love it, and we have bodybuilders love it because it's high in protein. The natural foods people, it's a great interest to them. It just is
a
much wider
market.
Range, yeah, than I expected.
And it's a very large market and very
yes.
fast. It's the fastest growing market, this natural food thing.
But the great part about it is you can fix it really quickly. I mean, I haven't tried the conventional way in a saucepan. I always use the microwave because it's quicker.
Right.
I did discover a couple of things about the directions.
Okay.
For me, at least, I use almost a half cup of water. I'm using more water than the first time. The first time it came out kind of dry.
Okay.
And I microwave in our microwave for 75 seconds instead of 60.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know whether you want to just check out your cooking process.
I would do that.
Or maybe you have a different microwave than I do. But the secret ingredient, apart from the dates, is you have to put half and half on it. At least that's what I do, and I probably would add brown sugar if we had any brown sugar. we don't keep it in the house.
Oh, I think we do. Don't we have brown sugar?
Yeah, we might have. I'd have to go looking for it.
Jeez. Well, where do people get this, Beth?
Right now in stores, we're only in Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and one store in Eastern Pennsylvania. So you can order online at madhecticfoods.com.
Okay, www.madhecticfoods, plural, right?
Yes.
.com.
Yes.
And this is absolutely called Start the Day Right. Get the most important meal of the day
in your
stomach, and you'll be better throughout the whole day. If you're a child, you'll learn better in school.
Exactly.
If you're a mom, you'll be able to cope with the day a whole lot better. And if you're just like me, because you like it just because it tastes good.
Wonderful.
I had a bowl at 5 o'clock this morning.
Oh, great. That's wonderful.
Now, from the title, your web address even, and the name of the company, it doesn't talk just about oatmeal, so I'm assuming you're going to branch into other products.
Yes, we have 2 in the works. The first is we're working on pretty non-traditional pancake mixes.
Oh.
Some interesting flavors. Probably high protein, hopefully something very interesting, not your ordinary pancake mix. And another product which doesn't even have a category out there, so I'm keeping that one under wraps.
Okay. Oh, please do. Don't give away any secrets, whatever you do. But
but
if there's a scoop about it, send on the menu a sample.
And I will.
We'll invite you back on the program, and you can spread the word.
Wonderful. I really appreciate that.
Well, take care, Beth, and it's good meeting you. Are you going to be at the Fancy Food Show?
Eventually. I'm not sure about this year, but we will get there.
Okay, very good.
Thank
I was going to
so
say
much.
See you then, but I'll just wait to hear from you.
Okay,
and
thank you so much.
Congratulations on a great idea and a great breakfast food.
I appreciate it.
Thanks, Beth. Bye-bye.
Uh-huh. Bye.
Well, we have one sweet interview coming up here. We have a complicated but charming family arrangement of the Edmund Varney, who was a third-generation beekeeper. Leanne Getz, his daughter, who has a business making wonderful products through Honey Ridge Farms. And then we have Leanne's son, Ryan Llewellyn, whose grandfather taught him about keeping bees. And what is the name of your wholesale company now, Ryan?
Sweet Bee Honey Company.
Yes. So I said it's a sweet story. But let's try to sort of separate this out. Let's start with the background. There's so much to talk about on this. How do you have five generations keeping bees?
It all started with Ed's father, and he kept bees there.
You know, my grandpa had some, just not as a commercial guy, but just to call an 80s orchard. And then he fought in the Civil War. And I remember him, too. We always called him our turkey grandpa because he had them big old turkeys when we were growing up, and they used to strut around, and we thought they were huge. Anyway, he used to tell us the stories about the war, you know, and then...
Yeah, we might say that, Edmund, you said you're 92, and you're still keeping bees.
I'm 92, yes.
And you're still doing bees.
He's still poking around in the bee yards down here. When I bring them down here, Grandpa, your dad kept bees in Lobo Canyon, wasn't it?
Right. That's a historic place now. We just heard from one of my cousins that there, in the L.A. Times, there's a big article about the Varney Ranch there in Lobo Canyon, and it's a historic place now. He bought 159 acres there for $159. In the early 20s.
Wow.
and he kept his bees. He operated. We had 350 colonies there all through the Depression days, and we all spent a lot of time up there.
Now you were keeping bees because you had orchards.
California parks and, oh, my God, I don't know. They're making a historic spot out of it. There was a big article in the L.A. Times this past week here about the ranch, and it's quite an article.
But you said you started keeping bees because you needed pollinators, right, for your orchards.
Well, yeah, that's how he...
Now, weren't you the one who thought... Were you the one who devised actually moving the hives?
Back when they started there in Lobo Canyon, which is near just outside of Hollywood in California, I believe it was orange groves that your dad had or the neighbors had, and I don't think they'd actually move the bees. I think they were in distance from where they kept them year-round, and they'd fly.
There was no, Dad got that place because he wanted to get an isolated place so that he didn't pick up any disease. That was his reason for buying that place, and because it was way up at the end of a Lobo Canyon, and the California Parks and Recreation or whatever it is, they bought the ranch.
Well, Grandpa, the orange trees, they were on the ranch near the hives, weren't they?
No, there's no orange trees there. Oh. There was no people living up there. There was nothing up there. We were isolated. We were right in a box canyon, and there was just a little dirt road that we used to drive up to. There was no pavement or anything, and it was a long way from where anybody lived.
So then you got this idea of taking the bees to where they were needed to pollinate fruits and vegetables, huh?
Yeah, well, we just grew up, and Dad taught both of my brother and me and my younger brother about bees, and we just, you know, in those days, we were little, but we always helped and never. And we always, with Dad say, "Get ready, boys, we're going to the ranch," where we knew we was going to have a good time. So,
what year did you start pollinating commercial crops?
Well, the only time I did was late 40s. I pollinated alfalfa.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the only pollination I did. Now pollination is a big deal because they used to have a lot of wild bees and people weren't even concerned about pollination because there were bees all over in the hills and in hollow trees and rocks and so they didn't really need it. But now
there's a shortage of bees.
You don't get any apples without bees, or you don't get any almonds without bees, and then all kinds of crops need bees for cross-pollinate the flowers so that they're fertile.
Somehow or other, via various different places from the Lobo Ranch, you made it to southeastern Washington State?
Yeah, that's a long story. I had a...
I don't know if we have time for a story that long. Let's just say that's where you...
Right,
after several adventures along the way, you got there.
Here and there, and ended up with retiring here in Washington, and that's where I got started in the bees, was Washington.
Well, how did your mother get involved with this?
Yeah, I actually got involved on the other side, developing products. I'm unfortunately deathly allergic to bees.
No, I read that. Isn't that unusual?
No, I'm not able to work in the bee fields anymore at all. So my father gave me the idea once Ryan was showing an interest in beekeeping and had some was actually getting honey off of his hives. He says, "Well, why don't you sell Ryan's honey at farmers market?" So I took his advice, and in 2004, that's how I got started, is selling the end product at farmers market, which
now,
was just one honey at that time.
Now, you make a variety of different honey products, though, now, I think.
We do. I started with one honey, which was the blackberry honey, and then as I got started with that and was finding success in selling Ryan's honey, I added additional artisan honeys. Mostly from the Pacific Northwest.
Well, what was the one that Peter was eating out of the jar with the spoon?
it was sort of soft and cloudy.
That was probably one of our honey crumbs.
That's exactly what it was. I loved it.
Right, that was a product that we actually added in 2000, I think it was late 2007. And it's a controlled granulation process of honey. And then we have six varieties, and five of those we add fruit and spices to. So that was an addition to our artisan honey line, along with launching the balsamic honey vinegar about the same time.
Right, and you have glazes for barbecuing.
Yes, we recently launched 11 new products here in the last few months, three grilling sauces and four honey glazes. And then we added three additional honey vinegars.
Now, all this honey comes from hives that you control?
A good portion of it comes from our son, Ryan. I buy some additional honey from my cousin in Montana. And then we also buy a couple varieties from a few local beekeepers that we know quite well, of beekeepers that provide the honey.
Now, is it a big bee area in southeast Washington?
Ryan, would you like to answer that?
No, it's not a particularly... there's a lot of bees that move through here to pollinate the crops, but most of the beekeepers are located east because there's too much precipitation here.
So you just do it there because it just happens to be where you are?
Right. I started here, and then I moved east also, but it takes a lot of days of sunshine to get all the bee work done, and it rains too much here.
So you actually operate out of Portland?
I operate
out of
eastern Oregon.
Oregon, not Portland.
It's near a town called Milton Freewater in the Walla Walla Appalachians, and my mother, she operates here in Vancouver.
I see. And now, you are how old now, Ryan?
I'm 23.
That's what I read. I wondered if it was an older article that I read. You started this, your grandfather taught you when you were a young boy, and you didn't really like it at first, right?
That's right. I followed my dad around in the bee yards. We did the moving and the pulling of the honey and the supering and all the different tasks involved in beekeeping, and I was probably, 6, 7, 8, 9 when I started, and I just hated it. It was terrible going out and getting bee stings. I didn't see why anyone would want to do that job.
So you got stuck a lot, huh?
When I was a junior in high school, I just started taking an interest in it, and I moved here and finished my last 2 years of high school in Vancouver and got to spend more time with Grandpa Ed, and he kind of spilled off onto me all of the benefits of beekeeping, and I got some hives from my dad, started with 20 hives, and now I'm up to 1,500 colonies.
Oh, wow. My goodness. Now, honey is such a wonderful natural product, isn't it? I mean, tell our listeners about some of its benefits, aside from the fact that it tastes wonderful.
Well, honey contains pollen if it's not processed or filtered, and that pollen's going to help people with allergies if they consume locally produced honey. It contains local pollens, and ingesting those pollens in the small quantities that are apparent in honey will help their immune system kind of adapt to the allergies that some people have. So that's one thing. Honey also has an antioxidant property, and it's similar to, it's antibacterial and antimicrobial, so you can use it on cuts and burns, antifungal, and it's a pretty healthy thing. I'm not sure what's in it. It's a mixture between glucose and fructose, simple sugar, and it has, a small trace amount of minerals and vitamins. Maybe you know more about it, Grandpa?
Well, yeah, it has vitamins and minerals because this is what the bees live on, and they have to have they need good nutrition just like human beings do to stay alive, and especially your queens, because they feed them that royal jelly, which is a mixture of pollen and honey, and it's pre-digested with the nurse bees, and people eat it. In fact, we, in 1955, my brother and I, we raised royal jelly all winter long down there in California, and we produced like $600 worth of royal jelly every day, 7 days a week. And
wow.
Then we all started eating it because it was quite in vitamins at that time. And boy, I tell you, we really noticed that it really, really jazzed us up. And I know my younger brother was eating more, and I told him, I said, boy, you're taking a lot of profit out of it. You're eating all this royal jelly. And then one day he says, I got to quit. He said, gosh, he said, I'm only sleeping for 4 or 5 hours a night, and I'm not tired. But when I was taking it, I took it in smaller doses. That when we quit, well, I could feel a little let down. So I know it has a
maybe
queen to live.
Now, if Mark
had royal jelly all their life, they live like 8 years, and a bee and only live 8 to 10 weeks. And the queen gets royal jelly all the time.
Well, now tell us the big story right now is this colony collapse disorder. And I thought it maybe eased up, but it's starting to come back again this year. Do you have a theory of why it's happening?
Yeah, colony collapse disorder, in my opinion, this is Ryan speaking again. I did my college thesis on colony collapse disorder and queen rearing and genetics, and I went to school at Washington State University, and Dr. Steve Shepherd there, he's the chairman of the entomology department, does a lot of research for colony collapse disorder, and went through a lot of the samples that were coming into the lab and tested them for tracheal mites and varroa mites and disease, and we marked the mitochondrial DNA of different strains of bees we were getting from the different beekeepers, and my opinion, being a beekeeper and seeing the scientific side of things, it's a compilation of problems. We're starting to move the bees because Grandpa mentioned pollination's becoming so extreme nowadays. We have these huge outcrops of like one crop, almond trees for thousands of acres, or blueberries, or apples, or whatever the crop is, and we're running, because of the demand of these, we're running our bees on these crops for more and more months out of the year and not letting them forage on natural varieties of pollen. There's also a bunch of contact with other bees. We all go to California, so all the bees are in close proximity to one another. They all get shipped on trucks. Disease gets transferred very easily. Disease has come into the country since it started with American fowl brood and varroa mites and everything else in the past 50 years, and all these problems keep adding up. And the other thing is our genetic kind of bottleneck. We're, as commercial commercial beekeepers, I think we have something like 2.3 million colonies in the United States right now. We used to have a lot more. We used to have almost 10 million. But 80% of these commercial colonies, the ones that get moved around for pollination, 80% of them get requeened by only 600 queen mothers every year. So there's a huge bottleneck. And the reasons for that go on and on and on. But anyway, herbicides and pesticides also contribute to the problem, and a lack of knowledge in our beekeeping community. A lot of our beekeepers are getting old, and there's not a lot of young people like myself coming to replace them. And some people have a technology barrier, and they're just, you know, at the tail end of their career. They're not really into learning all the new.
Yeah, I don't know. We have a lot of urban beekeepers now. Here in Pittsburgh, we have, and also in Manhattan, they have people keeping hives. Mm-hmm. On top of buildings. I mean, it's so...
No, and those people are very, very important. Those guys that have those isolated small number of hives pay a lot of attention to each colony, and their isolation and in the cities when there's not a lot of contact with some of our commercial hives, they may have the answer in terms of genetics eventually. We may find a bee that can survive on its own from these hobbyists that have been keeping bees on top of buildings or in their backyard for 10 or 15 years.
Well, how about this? We need to have a website for Honey Ridge Farm. Would you, Leanne, want to tell our listeners how to get your product?
Yes, our website is www.honeyridgefarms.com.
Okay, and you can order online?
You can order online. Some of our products are now available in some of the Whole Foods stores in several areas, and we're growing each week with new accounts, and hopefully one day we'll have more of our products in more stores so that we have more options for purchasing them.
Well, it's a fabulous family story, multi-generational, and I guess, Ryan, after you, there'll be another generation doing the same thing, I'm guessing.
Maybe. It's a tough job. I don't know. We'll see if I can convince the next generation to take over.
And Edmund, you hang in there. You really make a history.
I think I'm real fortunate to still be alive, and I can drive, and I mow the lawn, and I don't do as much work as I used to, but I do a little bit around there. But then I got a real nice son-in-law who helps me out, and Ryan helps me, and so, you know, it's nice.
It must
to
have been
have
that royal jelly.
Close by when you get to be an old guy, why, you need all the help you can get.
It's a royal jelly, I think. Where do you get that?
I enjoy my family, and I've really got a nice family, and we get to get together, everybody's kind of got a little interested. I got a boat, and we go crabbing in the summertime over on in Halem Bay, and we get together over there. So that's kind of we look forward to doing that. Yeah.
Well, that's a great American story, a great family story.
And thank
well,
you.
Well, I tell you, I've had a very good life, and we've been fortunate. And Honey Venice has been good to all my two brothers and myself. And
it sounds like
even
that.
My sister and her husband helped one of my brothers for a while in the honey business. So we've all got involved in it to some degree.
That must be lively parties.
Yeah, Edmund, how about this for a sign-off? Eight years from now, you'll be able to be on the Smucker's 100th birthday celebration with Willard Scott, and you'll be able to explain that it's honey is much better than strawberry jam. And thank you so much all for joining us today on the menu.
Thank you all.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, that's the end of today's program. Now, here's a question for you, Mrs. Rabbit. Are we going to tell our listeners what's coming next?
No.
Because we're off for a couple of rather special adventures across what we laughingly call the big pond. But Anne says we're going to keep it as a surprise. So I guess we'll keep it as a surprise until we get back.
And get some of that royal jelly.
No, we can't get any royal jelly. Maybe they have royal jelly across there, too.
No, they have cork. That's a clue.
Oh, they have cork, yes.
And dessert wine.
Okay. Well, if you can't get that, you can't get anything. And then we're going on to one of our favorite places in España as well. So we'll bring you back the story in the next several weeks' program. So we hope you'll join us then in the same time, same place. Until next week.
Bye-bye.